Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast. This is your host, Matt Shook, and this is the episode for Tuesday, and today is a celebration of all things non-American, and it's a good thing to do this day and age as we see America is struggling so mightily as a country, especially at the very top. If you catch my drift, the person in the top office, the oval-shaped office, the president guy, he's bad. But the Pistons are good. They're in fourth place alone in the Eastern Conference. A lot of hype about those Pacers, but just remember who told you so when they are fighting for their playoff lives this spring. They lost on Monday night to fall below the Pistons in the Eastern Conference standings. This is the same guy, by the way, who told you not to buy the hype on the Hornets this year, and they are now 11-19, a half game behind the Brooklyn Nets in the Eastern Conference standings. The Pistons return to action on Wednesday night in Dallas against the Mavericks, the worst team in the Western Conference and the second worst team in the NBA, now that those red-hot Chicago Bulls cannot lose. I was covering the game for the Associated Press on Monday night as the Bulls won their sixth straight game out here in Chicago. I was at the game and they beat the Philadelphia 76ers, and Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid sat this one out, as he is wont to do over his plethora of injuries that he's dealt with over the years. And on Friday night, I'm sure you caught it on Twitter, or maybe you watched it on ESPN, all the hoopla over the Oklahoma City-Philadelphia triple overtime thriller. Well, I figured that maybe those teams can play a really interesting best of 21 series or something like that while the rest of the NBA is in the playoffs this spring, because going into that game, neither of those teams were in the top eight. So we could talk about Westbrook and Melo and Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, all we want. But teams like the Pistons are the ones that maybe could get a little bit more credit as they're getting the victories while some of those other teams are sputtering in the early season. But today, along with our foreigner theme, we have a very special interview that I taped on Sunday with a two-time Olympic medalist. And with apologies to James Edwards III, Terry Foster, and a few of the others that we've had on the show, I believe that that is a first that we have podium finisher here on the Locked On Pistons podcast. That is Nick Willis, a one-mile runner from New Zealand, the 1,500 meters. He is a former University of Michigan athlete, a New Zealander who is now a huge Pistons fan, and he'll be talking to us about that. I was messing around on Twitter, looking to follow some people for the Locked On Pistons account, and who's the big Pistons supporters out there. So I followed the Pistons, followed the people covering the team, and did a search for Pistons and found Nick Willis, a two-time Olympic medalist who can't stop tweeting about the Pistons and how much he loves the Detroit basketball team. So I had to follow him. He followed me back. We threw some texts back and forth about when we could get him on the show, because I'm kind of an Olympics nerd myself, so it's a little bit of me indulging in this as well. But plus something that's been struck with throughout the whole podcast experience that I've had here with you guys. It's every day there's a new report that comes in of all the places that download the podcast. Of course, the United States is first, and Michigan inside of that, the most downloads. But we get downloads from France, Germany, Spain, the United Kingdom, Canada, wherever that is, and a lot of people from Australia. Australia is a big supporter of the Locked On Pistons podcast, and of course, of the Detroit Pistons as well. So I will try to figure out as we go on why that is. I'm going to pull up the breakdown here, if you'll be patient with me for a second, about the countries. There's a whole list of them. Every country you can possibly imagine is represented in terms of the downloads that we've had on the show here. Like I said, Slovenia, Germany, Spain, United Kingdom, Canada, Australia. We go down the list: France, Belgium, India, Puerto Rico, which is in the United States, not a country, but anyway, Norway, China, Ukraine, Philippines, Serbia, Argentina, Israel, Taiwan, Brazil, Costa Rica, Singapore, Hong Kong, Japan, Chile, Curacao, Jordan, Guyana, Russia. I mean, all over the place. Great. Hello to everyone across the globe that is listening to the Locked On Pistons podcast. And special shouts out to my boy Yozak from Spain, who reaches out on Twitter about some of the things that we talk about here on the show. And a special shout out to Daniel Filipovic, and an even more special shout out to his young son, who he named Isaiah Thomas Filipovic. I'm sorry. So Daniel and Isaiah Thomas. Isaiah Thomas, we're already confused about hearing about the Cleveland Cavaliers, former Boston Celtics Isaiah Thomas, as Pistons fans when we hear that name. So now we've got another name coming down the pike as the young Australian will hopefully be the point guard of the Pistons somewhere down the line as well. So I'll share a picture of Isaiah and Daniel on social media, probably on Twitter later today too, so you can see the young Pistons fan named after Zeke as well. But we've got Draft.com and Draft Wednesday coming up tomorrow, and you should join us on there and use promo code LOPISTONS as well. If you want to support the podcast, that's the best way to do it right now. We'll have some other ways that you can help support the podcast as well. I appreciate your listening and spreading the word about the podcast, but the money helps as well. Get on iTunes, give us a review. That helps us in the iTunes rankings. And at your holiday parties with your coworkers and friends and family that you run into Pistons fans all over the place, mention that you know of a great daily podcast where we talk about the Pistons called Locked on Pistons, and that they should be listening to it as well. But we're going to have that interview with Nick Willis right after a quick word here, because if your company is interested in men between the ages of 18 and 44, then your company should be sponsoring this podcast. Locked on Pistons is listened to by 98% men and 80% between the ages of 18 to 44. So you want men 18 to 44, then this is your spot. Plus, our rates are reasonable, so email me at matt_schoch, S-C-H-O-C-H, to find out more.
Yes, sir!
And now we are joined by world-class runner Nick Willis of New Zealand, the two-time Olympic medalist, who is now also, as I found out on Twitter recently, a big Detroit Pistons fan. So I'm kind of an Olympics nerd, so I wanted to take this opportunity for Locked on Pistons to catch up with one of the fans that's more known globally than most of the other Detroit Pistons fans. And Nick, first of all, thanks for coming to Locked on Pistons.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure to be on here. Thanks for having me. As a New Zealander living in Michigan, sometimes people say, hey, you don't really know much about American sports. So it's a unique privilege to be on here with you. Thanks for having me.
So when you were growing up in New Zealand, you moved over to the States to run in college at the University of Michigan over in Ann Arbor. But what was your experience and some of New Zealanders' experiences growing up with the NBA, and how much, when you were growing up, were people fans of the sport, and what teams did they kind of, what was the NBA environment over in New Zealand back then?
Yeah, I think it's very similar to what a lot of the other countries around the world experienced. The 92 Dream Team really was the huge thing that took the NBA global. And I was in middle school collecting basketball cards, and there was sort of the craze with that, and everybody loved Michael Jordan, and everyone else seemed to pick another Bulls player to sort of latch on to. A lot of kids like BJ Armstrong, but I was a huge fan of Scottie Pippen, and that was sort of my guy. And then one of my friends had been studying over in America with his family and came back and told me about this rookie named Allen Iverson who did a crossover over Michael Jordan, and so we all jumped on that bandwagon. And so I was a huge AI fan when I first came to the States, and like most New Zealanders, we're really, really big into the NBA, but didn't have a specific team necessarily that we followed. And so I sort of latched on to the 76ers as I first arrived in Ann Arbor, just because I liked Allen Iverson so much.
And then, as we were talking a little bit off the air, you kind of saw him in person against the Pistons and kind of latched on a little bit to the Detroit team.
Yeah, one of my teammates got tickets through his dad to a corporate box, I think in one of the playoff games against the 76ers that went double or triple overtime, and I was rooting for the 76ers the whole way through. But then the crowd at the Palace won me over. It was a real epic duel, and I fell in love with the Pistons that night, and that was when Tayshaun Prince had his breakout game. And so it was sort of, that was the awakening of the 04 championship team, really, when they toppled the 76ers to continue on in their playoff run. And from that point on, I've been following the Pistons through and through. It's been a bit of a tough journey the last 6 years. I got a lot of friends in Ann Arbor saying, why do you follow them, man? Just give up. Just follow the college sports. But I really think that these guys are the greatest athletes in the world. And as an Olympic athlete myself, I really just appreciate and respect their incredible athleticism. It just blows me away. And I can't get enough of it, really.
And for a guy who's running the mile times that you've ran throughout your career, to say that they're some of the more incredible athletes is even more of a bigger compliment than a lot of us everyday Joes saying that kind of thing. But what about the environment now when you're back in New Zealand? Is there a little bit more NBA pull? And I would imagine that Steven Adams and the success he's had in Oklahoma City has got a lot of the down under New Zealand fans to turn to the Thunder, I would imagine. Is that correct?
Yeah, there was sort of a fashion trend that started maybe 6 or 7 years ago that every sort of 15 to 25-year-old in New Zealand in the summer just walked around in an NBA jersey. It was the fashion trend to wear to the beach, and no matter what sort of demographic or group that you belong to. And so as Steven Adams came on board, now 80% of the people in New Zealand are huge Oklahoma City Thunder fans, and that's the big news anytime he has a double-double or has a big night against one of the other premier centers in the league. And New Zealanders are becoming a lot more sort of well-tuned to a lot more basketball strategy rather than just seeing alley-oops and all that. They have a much better appreciation for the different defensive setups and different things. So it's a lot more fun for me to read the write-ups now rather than just reading off box scores.
Yeah, it sounds like they're becoming a little bit more of an educated fan base. Like a lot of the NBA fans are transitioning into the nuanced analytics looks at the games, and it should be interesting to see how that translates globally as fans continue to pay attention to the game. Now, a little bit more on your career. Now that Pistons fans know that they have a non-American runner to root for going forward and should have been rooting for many years now, you won the silver in Beijing in the 1500 meters and then got another one just this last summer, a bronze medal in 2016 in Rio. You've also competed in 2012 in London, 2004 in Athens. How did those Olympic experiences stack up for you? And was the last one in Brazil for you a little bit more satisfying than the others?
Yeah, I sort of got the two experiences in Beijing. I was ranked 13th in the world, and I was sort of a wide-eyed kid, 25-year-old kid, so not that young, but I just couldn't believe it. It was just sort of that shock and disbelief, and I just broke down in tears and all of the euphoria that came along with that. And then after a relative failure in London, coming back in Rio to come again with another medal to prove that it wasn't sort of a one-off fluke was just immensely satisfying. Sort of like when the teams come back and win back-to-back championships, that second one is much harder to do again than the first. And so that was sort of that sort of etched my name in the record books as one of the premier 1500 meter runners in the world, I suppose. And it just gives me a lot of satisfaction. If my career were to end tomorrow, hopefully it doesn't, then there's sort of nothing, no regrets left behind, I suppose.
Yeah, well, no need to qualify premier runners in the world with I suppose there. You're certainly in that group as the, I believe, the oldest 1500 medalist of all time, which you're still younger than me by a few months. So I feel that makes me feel kind of old as I sit here, you know, well out of any kind of athletic shape. And along those lines, Nick, it sounds like that you and your wife as well are doing a little bit of coaching and a little bit of running tips. You got some stuff on your Facebook page that people should follow as well about getting into the groove for running. With the holidays coming up, everyone's got New Year's resolutions and everything. Are there some quick tips that you can pass along to us non-world-class runners, shall we say, to kind of get started and get into some routines that you might be able to stick with in 2018?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the main mistake people make when they get a motivation, they buy some new sneakers or whatever, and they said, all right, I'm going to try this running thing out. They're all motivated, and they just push too hard too early, and people come up with shin splints or runner's knee, they get plantar fasciitis. There's lots of little ailments that can come along if you jump in it too quickly, and you've really got to take baby steps. So I'd just encourage someone over the first couple of weeks to slowly working up to completing 10 or 15 or 20 minutes by running every other or every third day, even taking walking breaks in between. You may not feel tired at all, but your limbs and your joints and your muscles, if you haven't been doing it, aren't used to it, so you're just going to take baby steps. But the human body is pretty incredible. It adapts to things pretty quickly if you give it time to make those adjustments. And so by week 3, 4, 5, then you'll be ready to hit 30, 40, 50 minutes a day, no problem at all. But you just got to sort of roll that snowball starting from a little hand size until it becomes a big snowman, I suppose, is a metaphor for the season that we're in right now. So it comes along pretty quickly, but you just got to be patient initially.
Unfortunately, you might be running by a lot of those snowmen for the next few months here in Michigan. But I know you've been to Little Caesars Arena to check out the new digs that the Pistons have. What do you think about the team right now? We're taping this on Sunday evening after the third win in a row for the Pistons after the long losing streak that they had against some tough competition. How are you feeling about this team right now?
Yeah, I'm just really encouraged. I follow all of the guys on social media, and you watch the guys on the bench and how they cheer each other on when the bench is out there and the starters are all cheering on and giving each other high fives. I feel like you can read into what's going on in the locker room and the mentality, and I feel like you can pick up 5 or 10 wins extra a season just by having that camaraderie, that team unity, regardless of what the talent is on the team or isn't. And that's something I think has been lacking over the last few years, and obviously when you're having success, then that builds on and it keeps it up. And now they've had a tough stretch, and I hope that some of the veteran leaders on the team, Anthony Tolliver seems to be a real glue guy and has a lot of mana, as we say in New Zealand, or respect in the league, and hopefully he's been able to hold the guys together. And that's one of the reasons why I love the NBA over the NFL or ice hockey, because you can really sort of study the face of these players. You get to feel like you know them so well, and as a professional athlete myself, I love to analyze what's going on inside these guys' heads. Having rookies out there, they're sort of nervous, they're hesitant, they don't sort of play their pure selves, and that's encouraging for me to see. Luke Kennard comes out his first game and drops his first 5 shots. He's ice cold, not nervous at all, and that's the stuff that I love to watch, just seeing what's going on inside of these guys' heads. And it looks like, by and large, the team's heading in the right direction. Psychologically, hopefully they can keep the passes and the turnovers down and continue to have some success.
Now, kind of heading back to the Olympics a little bit, Nick. We're talking with Nick Willis of New Zealand, a world-class mile runner who's won 2 medals. He won in 2008 the silver medal, in 2016 in Rio the bronze medal in Brazil. What's kind of your go-to story as far as your Olympic times? Is there like and maybe one from your individual races and your medal stand? I know that you were the flag bearer in 2012, I believe, for New Zealand at the opening ceremonies. And is there like an Olympic Village story that you have where you ran into a particular athlete or something like that? Do you have a couple of go-to stories when people ask about your Olympic experiences?
Yeah, the highlight for me as a wide-eyed young Olympian when I was a sophomore in college, I went to the Athens Olympics, and the U.S. Basketball team was staying out of the Village, but the NBA guys are the stars of the Village, and Yao Ming was there. I think he's 7'6" or something, and he just towered above everybody, and every single person wanted to get an autograph from him, and he was just willing and able, and he was just so giving of himself in the Village. And being there at the closing ceremony, you got 8,000 athletes down on the track sort of soaking up the atmosphere, and then you got this guy who's standing sort of 1.5 feet above everybody else. He was a giant among men, but had that charisma that we all know Yao for now as fans. And so that's what stands out. I was a fan at the games. The other games, when I was really shooting for a medal, I was right in my tunnel vision. I was trying not to be distracted by anything else, and I didn't really soak up the Olympic atmosphere so much, but I got the good results from that. And that's the real challenge in the games. You got those who are there to, they made the Olympics, and it's like, wow, I'm going to go have fun and do my best, of course, but I really just want to savor every moment. And then you've got the top 2% there who are there for business. And because my race is normally on the very last night of the whole games, there's very little time to really soak up the festivities afterwards. The game shuts down and it's time to head home. So I'm glad my first games I was really able to meet some of those guys. Kobe Bryant was in the Village, I think, as well, and some of the tennis players. I guess at these Rio Olympics, the golfers were the stars because it was the first time that he had some of the PGA stars. So I got to meet Ricky Fowler and Bubba Watson. That was a big highlight for me as well.
And your race is a unique one in that you're not just sprinting like a 200 meters or something like that. It's more about how the race unfolds, how the race evolves in terms of when guys start to run away from the pack and whatnot. Do you feel like yours is kind of a little bit more unique of a distance, especially because you're basically a mile as well. I mean, is there something you feel about the 1500 meters that kind of stands out to you?
Yeah, I think in addition to the 100 meters, because you've got the nerves of the false starts, the 1500 meters is the blue ribbon event for a reason. There's so much drama that can unfold, but it's not too long that it's boring, and there's so many different factors that can take place. So when I won the bronze this past Games, it was the slowest race in 90 years, I think. But that didn't take away from how suspenseful it was, because the last 400 meters was an all-out sprint. Just, I guess, like back in the day when the Pistons were winning games, keeping the opponents under 70 points, it still makes it extremely exciting. A different strategy can evolve in any given day in my race, and it's a head game as much as a physical game. And they brought in a new, way to present the athletes to the games for track and field, at least. And they brought us out into the stadium under the sort of ring of fire for a television intro. But what the fans don't know is they kept us in this tiny little room for 20 minutes right before our race, where we couldn't really stretch our legs out. So most of us all got all stiff-legged, and we weren't feeling all loose and getting ready for the game. And then suddenly you're on the start line ready to go. So there was a lot of tension as you're in. It's like being in the locker room with your opposition before you're about to go into the NBA Finals. Here I was with 11 of the guys I was about to battle, and you're sort of face-to-face with them, trying not to get intimidated, but be the one that sort of exerts confidence, I suppose. So that was a unique dynamic as well.
Well, thanks for mentioning that about the Pistons, first of all, because everyone likes to rip on those Pistons versus Pacers series from 2005 and 2004. But yeah, I thought they were very, in their own way, very entertaining and very satisfying to watch. And it's funny you should mention about the holding room that you guys had, because I was at Rio in 2016 covering the Olympics for the Virgin Islands paper, and one of our athletes was a hurdler named Eddie Levette, who had to endure a rain delay before his hurdling heat. And like you said, they were sitting in that small room, legs getting tight, all the problems that they had dealing with the rain delay and getting ready for that. So interesting that you kind of had to sit there. Like you said, it's kind of like throwing two NBA teams in the same locker room or something like that before a competitive series. But what about Tokyo coming up 2020? I know like you said, it's kind of a year-by-year thing sometimes for runners, but all ships go for Tokyo, and you're hoping to make it five Olympics for yourself in a couple of years?
Yeah, that's my hope and plan, and I'm even looking at potentially moving up to the 5,000 meters race just to mix things up a little bit and test myself over the slightly longer distance, and maybe even throw in a marathon before or after the Olympics as well, because that's sort of a bucket list item for runners. You're not really a runner unless you've completed a marathon. That's what Joe Public thinks anyway, when you sit next to someone on an airplane and say, oh, you're a runner, have you run a marathon? And you say no, so you suddenly lose a lot of respect in their book. Not that that's the motivation, but it's sort of a funny nuance of that. But going back to what you said about the Pistons and Pacers, I got a little funny story. A handful of us from my team, the track team at Michigan, we decided we were going to go to watch the Pistons-Pacers playoff game when Prince got the block on Reggie Miller down in Indianapolis. So we managed to get tickets offered to us from some kids on the Purdue team, and we were going to rendezvous with them in Indianapolis an hour before the game. But as we drove down there were tornadoes that hit Indianapolis. I'm not sure if you recall, and there were sirens going off, and we're waiting, and these kids from Purdue never made it. Because the power lines had locked down the highway on that road down there. So we ended up having to watch the game in one of those horse race betting, rooms. And so we had like little booths with a tiny little TV as we're cheering on. And I remember that block like never before, one of the greatest blocks of the NBA, as I'm sitting watching this horse race betting booth. That was sort of my funny story about the Pistons Pacers playoff series.
Well, you're definitely a Pistons fan because we all have those memories of where we were when some of those iconic moments happened, and that Prince block was definitely one of them. I remember where I was watching that game as well. But Nick Willis, New Zealander, two-time Olympic champion. It's funny that you mentioned that. If someone on the plane asked you if you're a runner and asked you about the marathon, and maybe you said no, but then, you know, I did win two Olympic medals. Does that count as a runner? I guess I'd say that would be yes in my book. But follow him on Twitter at Nick Willis. Just how it sounds, NICKWILLIS, a New Zealander runner and a Pistons fan through and through that Pistons fans should be rooting for. So, Nick, I want to thank you for taking the time and joining us today.
Hey, thanks very much for having me.
Anything else you want to put out as far as where fans can follow you besides Twitter or anything else coming up that people should be looking out for?
Just for those who are in the Michigan area, if you're keen to go watch some sports for a low price during the wintertime, the University of Michigan just opened its brand new indoor track. It's the best facility in the world, potentially. And we're going to be opening up the track on January 13th. I'm going to be racing a professional mile race there. So come on down to Ann Arbor and come watch a fast mile. We'd love to have a big crowd there if you're a Michigan fan.
And that was my interview with New Zealand runner Nick Willis, a two-time Olympic medalist. And I want to thank him again for joining us. Follow him at Nick Willis, NICKWILLIS, and show him a little love from Locked On Pistons fans as well. But we'll be back for Wednesday's podcast to talk about the Dallas Mavericks, who the Pistons will play at 8:30 p.m. Eastern at American Airlines Arena. This is your host, Matt Shook, and follow me on Twitter at Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, and another underscore after there. Share this podcast with friends and family on social media. You can be subscribed at Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Podbean, Stitcher, Overcast, Alexa, all sorts of places. Visit the LockedOnPistons.com website as well. We're just posting episodes as far as content right now, but maybe we'll do some writing in 2018 as well. A little tease there. But thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll talk to you all soon.